On today's episode of Hoops 360, it is March at last. So we dive into some conference tournament previews, which teams will stand out, who could surprise us, and some players to keep an eye on. Stay tuned. Welcome in to another edition of Hoops 360. Look at the calendar. March is officially upon us. College hoops is getting into full swing with the conference tournaments coming up this week. So on today's edition of the show, we're going to be previewing all of the Power Four conference tournaments. What to look for, who to look for in the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, and Big 12 conference championships, plus some other ones that we should be keeping an eye on. It's not all just the Power Four that has all of the fun around here. So we're keeping an eye on who needs these conference championships the most. Can some teams that have been absolutely dominating either their respective conferences in regular season play or conference tournaments over the past couple of years, can they maintain their reign, or who could potentially knock all of them off? So all of that coming up on today's edition of the show. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Cass, happy March. Yeah.
Happy March. We're here. Let's go.
We're here. It's the best time of the year. And you are headed to Greenville, South Carolina. You're heading to the SEC tournament later this week. So make sure to keep your eyes locked in on sports.yahoo.com. Keep an eye out for all of Cass's amazing work, all of her breakdowns, all of her analysis, all the conversations she's going to be having with the players and the coaches that are going to be repping out there in Greenville. So that feels like an easy place to start, right? At the SEC tournament, we have South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Texas, and LSU rounding out the top four seeds. I'm sure just how we all expected it. Because South Carolina can become, did become the first team ever in the SEC to win four consecutive conference tournaments from 2015 to 2018. Now, after winning three straight, they have the opportunity to win four straight twice in their program history. Can South Carolina do it? Will South Carolina do it?
Can they do it? Yes. Will they do it? I think that's completely up for grabs. I'm heading out to Greenville because this is, you know, the SEC is packed with teams that could make a Final Four. So you look at South Carolina, Texas, Vanderbilt, maybe even LSU. Like, these are powerhouse programs that can tear through the NCAA tournament. And I think the damage that they can do to each other in Greenville this week is going to help determine that path. It's obviously South Carolina's to lose. And as you said, like, when you have so much experience going through this, playing back to back to back to back days to win a title, you know what it takes. But don't overlook Vanderbilt. Don't overlook Texas, which has defeated South Carolina this year. Don't overlook LSU, which is a rivalry. And don't overlook, like, what's going to happen before there. I know some people have been talking about the SEC in terms of, you are going to want to watch this tournament from when it begins on Wednesday. Like, these teams are not necessarily nobodies that are going to be tipping off. I believe Tennessee is playing on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it's a who's who. I mean, Tennessee gets an action on Thursday as the sixth seed. But we have Kentucky playing on Wednesday. Kentucky. Like, that's a team that we have talked at length about throughout the season, a team that was a top 25 ranked team, a team that we didn't necessarily view in that first elite tier of the SEC with the Texases and the South Carolinas and the Vanderbilts of the world. But they were a very good competitive team that if you didn't give them your 100% effort on any given night, like, Kentucky had the ability to slay any sort of giant. So I think the fact that we are watching them on the first day of this tournament shows how deep this conference truly is. And you bring
they
it up.
They almost just took out South Carolina. Like,
yes.
Last day of the regular season, almost just took out South Carolina. To your point, like, the ninth seed in the SEC could compete for hosting duties in the NCAA tournament.
That's insane. That's insane. I mean, that's just how deep and competitive this conference is. And also, at times, how cannibalistic this conference has been. I mean, we were talking about South Carolina, not just an SEC tournament contender, a national championship contender, one of the best teams in all the land. And we're talking about how they were beaten by Texas, another team that we view as a national championship contender, beaten by Oklahoma, another team that absolutely could be a host site in the NCAA tournament. So let's say it's not South Carolina's tournament. And look, I'm not going to be the one to bet against South Carolina, especially not in this environment. I mean, I've never been to Greenville, but obviously I'll watch every single year. That's a home game. Greenville's what, 30 minutes from Columbia, 45 minutes from Columbia?
And Greenville's very nice place overall, though.
I've heard lovely things.
Yeah.
Heard lovely things. I would love to. But also Greenville's kind of situated in the SEC geography, kind of on an island. Like, you look at the men's side in Nashville, that's a 3-hour drive from Knoxville. That's a couple hours from Lexington, Kentucky. That's a couple of hours from Birmingham, Alabama, where you'll have Alabama and Auburn fans. Like, Nashville's a very centrally located city within the geography of the Southeastern Conference. Greenville isn't. It's close to South Carolina and, like, maybe Georgia, and that's it. So that's one massive, you know, benefit for South Carolina is the fact that it is a home game, that you're going to have so many South Carolina fans in the stands. And also because this is a place where they're comfortable. They have a lot of players with a lot of experience in games with the stage as big as this is. So I'm not going to be the one to bet against South Carolina. You're not going to see me doing that. But if there was a team that was to knock off South Carolina, if you had to pick one, who would it be?
I have to pick only one.
Who do you think would be in the conversation too? We won't make you pick one. I won't be mean today. It'll be nice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I mean, let's look at the semifinals, right? So if South Carolina and LSU win, you have another rivalry game. That was really close.
Yeah.
Does LSU kind of get their comeback on that one? If Oklahoma upsets LSU, you have that rematch. So there's another. And then if you make it to the championship game, I mean, like, South Carolina has had Texas's number for much of the last year and a half. Yeah. Does that change? Maybe. But maybe not. Like, as you said, we're at the point where South Carolina is basically playing a home game and is much has much more chemistry than they had way back in November when Texas won that one. You know, Texas had kind of more of the returning starter pieces that have played together when they faced each other. But you could also have Vanderbilt, South Carolina in the championship game, which would be very good. I think it is deep on who can beat South Carolina. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you exactly what you said. Like, if I'm a betting woman, I'm not going against South Carolina. If you're any other team, though, and you do upset South Carolina and win this SEC championship, dang, have you earned it, because you have to go through South 100%. Carolina to win the SEC.
And looking at how this all shakes out, if everything it just goes chalk and we get 1-4 versus 2-3, we get South Carolina and LSU and then Vanderbilt and Texas in a semifinal.
I love that.
I love that. Absolutely.
What a fun Saturday.
Seriously. And then we'll get – and let me just – say, according to chalk again, that South Carolina would beat an LSU in the semifinal. We get South Carolina Vanderbilt. Now, honestly, guys, mm-hmm. I think for the SEC, South Carolina Vanderbilt feels like the best possible scenario for a championship game. South Carolina Texas, if that's what we get, you're not going to hear complaints from me. But South Carolina Texas is going to be a boring game. Like, more than likely. Like, it's going to be a very defensive, low-scoring game. And we know South Carolina's elite. We know that Texas is elite. If you haven't been paying attention, if, you know, now that the calendar has flipped to March, you're just now starting to pay attention to college hoops. First of all, welcome. So happy to have you. Second of all, Vanderbilt's not really being talked about in that same kind of upper echelon, at least to maybe some more casual viewers. So I would love if Vanderbilt was able to really cement themselves as, you know, part of the upper echelon of the SEC and getting to the SEC tournament championship final.
I'm also looking at, though, in terms of, like, the micro of it is fun, but the macro of it is how will it affect the NCAA tournament and selection Sunday. Which of Vanderbilt or Texas is going to take that final number one seed? They've kind of been trading off, and I think, especially seeing as they are going to line up in the semifinals, will that result impact which one of them receives the number one seed? Because recent results are a thing. The last 10 are a thing. How they do in the conference tournament is a thing. And the committee is clearly paying attention to that.
And it should be a thing. Like, how you're playing right now should bear more weight than what you did in November and Thanksgiving, which was the last time we saw Texas beat South Carolina. And I think it could be, and I'm looking at the net right now. I'm honestly kind of shocked the differentiation between Texas and Vanderbilt, at least in net standards. That's just one data point of many. But Texas is sitting at 4, Vanderbilt at 7.
Texas has the better resume. Like, they do, but it's not all about the net or the WOB or this or that. Like, it's everything together. And if Vanderbilt defeats them to end the season, like, committee might feel that that's just the stronger play.
Dang, Vanderbilt all the way up to a one seed potentially. Shout out to Shea Ralph in that program. But as we're talking about the macro of it all, the NCAA tournament implications of it all, what team in the SEC do you think needs to make a run the most in order to bolster up their NCAA tournament resume?
Oh, I'm so bad at picking singulars. You know this.
Or teams. You know,
or teams.
I mean, Tennessee is one.
Yeah. Tennessee is the team that needs to get back on the right track. I don't think it's going to help their seeding, but they just need to have a little more confidence. They had it against Vanderbilt. They played a very strong third quarter. They were in it with, you know, the team that's ranked top 5 in the country in the AP, that is top 7 in net. They just need to keep that going and carry it into the NCAA tournament. I think in terms of upping your stock, though, you have Oklahoma that was still in that top 16 reveal. Ole Miss has stumbled, but maybe they're still in play for a top 16 seed. Maybe, you know, maybe they can make a deep run and show off there. Kentucky maybe can do it. You know, LSU wants to maintain their kind of top 2 seeding, maybe top 3. But Tennessee, in terms of figuring themselves out and getting on the same page and using this as like, all right, new season, it's 0-0, let's go.
I always love to use the very scientific metric of vibes. like, sometimes
it's March, it's all about vibes.
It's all about vibes. Like, throw everything that you know about these teams in the trash and just go off of vibes and vibes alone. Tennessee is it's not a question of if they're making the tournament or not. Of course, Tennessee's making the NCAA tournament. They'll be a 6 or a 7 seed, you know, TBD of what happens in the SEC tournament. But the vibes in Tennessee aren't good. I mean, you end the season the way that they have. They end the season on a 6-game losing skid, especially when they were up against LSU at halftime. Like you said, they had a great third quarter against Vanderbilt. When they've had a lot of just bad juju sprinkled throughout the program, throughout the entirety of the season, the vibes aren't good. Losing 6 straight to end the season, you know, you're feeling the weight. You're hearing the conversations. You're hearing the rumblings. You know what people are saying about you on social media, as much as they want to say that they don't. Of course that they do. So, I mean, what better way to boost your vibes index, your BVI, your basketball vibes index, than going on a run and knocking off an absolute giant in the SEC tournament? So, like you said, your luck can shift, your vibes can shift on any given day in the postseason.
I need that stat in the NCAA nitty gritties. Maybe we can keep a stat. We'll check back on Selection Sunday.
Charlie Baker, president of the NCAA, if you're listening, BVI, Basketball Vibes Index. I think we might be onto something here. Any last thoughts on the SEC tournament or anything in particular that you're going to be watching for when you're in Greenville?
You know, just everything we talked about. I'm going to be building out some stories for the NCAA tournament. As we stated, like, these are teams that could reach a Final Four. And I think even if it goes chalk every step of the way, it's going to be an entertaining tournament.
It's always going to be entertaining. And you know who else is entertaining on every single night is Mikayla Blakes. She's the leading scorer in NCAA women's basketball, and she joins us on the podcast coming up next. Joining us now here on Hoops 360 is not just Vanderbilt's leading scorer, but the nation's leading scorer. And as of Tuesday afternoon, the SEC Player of the Year, Mikayla Blakes, joins us. Mikayla, thank you for your time. SEC Player of the Year, how does it feel? How does it sound to hear that?
I mean, it's exciting, definitely. another award to add, but it shows a lot of hard work, and I wouldn't be here without my teammates and my coaches. So just fully a team win.
100%. It's a testament to you, of course. It's a testament to your team. Speaking of your team and your coaching staff, Aubrey Galvin, your teammate, was named SEC Freshman of the Year. Your head coach, Shay Ralph, was named Head Coach of the Year. And I know that we just got into March. I know that you all have much bigger expectations and goals that you want to achieve. I know that, you know, you have the SEC tournament, you have the NCAA tournament, of course, 100%. But when you get those awards and that recognition, that's for a reason, right? That's not by accident. Yeah. So if you could just look back on this regular season, what has it meant to you, to your teammates and to your coaching staff to be recognized with those awards?
Yeah, I think it's just showing how we prove people wrong. I think a lot of people overlooked us to start the season. A lot of people said we probably wouldn't finish where we were today, second in the SEC. And I think that's just who we are. We just always want to prove people wrong. We're competitors and we're never complacent. So that's the main thing.
And Aubrey has come in and it has been such a force, as you were last season in your freshman year. What is Aubrey like as a player, as a hooper, and as a teammate?
Yeah, I would say when she plays, she just really doesn't care. Like, she doesn't let things get to her. She's going to try her fancy passes, do whatever. And if it messes up, she doesn't care. She's still going to do it. And I think that's having that mindset, especially as a freshman, is really important. And I think that's why she's done so great this year. And she's such a team player. She wants to give out so many assists, but sometimes we're like, shoot the ball. Like, you're wide open, so shoot the ball. But I couldn't imagine playing with anybody better.
Yeah, and that is just hearing you say those things. It is the perfect representation of what Shay Ralph had to say about you. Myself, my co-host, Cassandra Negley, we got to catch up with your head coach a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about how great of a leader you are for the entire team, how great of a leader that you've been for Aubrey, that you have led by example, that you do the work, that you motivate the team, whether it's, you know, being vocal or just leading by example. Has that been something that you've thought about? Do you actively think about being a leader in your team, or does it just kind of come a little bit more naturally to you?
I think they've pushed me to be more vocal this year, so that I really have to think about. But I think just my work ethic and things like that, I don't think about. It's just who I am. I just want to continue to work on my craft. But definitely being vocal this year has been very important, and I've tried to get better at it. I think I'm still working towards it, but there's definitely improvement.
Yeah. Of course, absolutely, improvements can be made. You know, looking back at your time at Vanderbilt, you were a top 10 recruit coming out of high school. You had offers from everywhere across the country, blue blood programs and programs that had more recent success than Vanderbilt had. Why Vanderbilt?
I mean, this is the best place academically and athletically. We have the best AD in the country, best coaching staff in the country, best facility in the country, everything. So I think this program was just set up just to be on the rise, and it was a perfect time for me to be able to come here, play with my teammates, play under Coach Ralph as well. And the other sports here are having success as well. So we just always support each other. We're at games, and I feel like it's a perfect time to be here in Nashville, and I just chose to bet on myself.
You bring up your athletic director. Candace Story Lee is one of the most electric people I've ever met in my life. She has so much passion for what she does. And you mentioned the success of the athletic department. That's no accident. It's because of what Candace Story Lee's vision is and her belief in Vanderbilt athletics. You look at the football program, baseball program has been a perennial contender. Men's basketball is a contender. Now you have Vanderbilt squarely in the national championship conversation. What's it like to be firsthand right in the thick of an athletic renaissance in Nashville?
Yeah, I would just say it's exciting. Like, every time something new happens, we're all excited for each other. And it just wants us, every team, to be great. Like, seeing other teams succeed, it forces you to want to be great as well and want to be top of the top. So I think we just push each other and support each other. So it's perfect.
And there's been a huge shift, not just in the Vanderbilt athletic department, but in the women's basketball program. You know, when we talked to Coach Ralph just a couple of weeks ago, she talked about how it wasn't that long ago that it was kind of an empty house whenever the women's basketball program played, that there were more opposing fans in the house than there were Vanderbilt fans. Fast forward to now, it's the hottest ticket in town. You've got black and gold in the entire arena. where was that shift? Did you notice a specific time or a specific game or a specific moment where you really felt like, you know, the women's basketball team was catching on with the fan base?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that was probably one of my biggest shocks, like coming to Vanderbilt and then playing in front of the crowd. I think my freshman year, it was kind of, I don't know, unsettling a little bit just to see how many people were out for the men's. And then for us to play Tennessee the next day to not get the same amount of fans and like the court rush, I feel like that was kind of, it set me back a little bit. But then I think like it just kind of told me like we need to prove to people that we're good. And I think our non-conference, we went undefeated. That was a good test. But I think probably when we beat LSU, I think when we proved to our fans that we can beat ranked teams, I think that's when they started coming in as well. And from then on, it's just been a lot of more Vanderbilt fans in there, a lot of people who supported us, a lot of people saying they want to buy season tickets next year. So I think we had to prove to them that we're good and we're actually exciting as well, just like the men. So.
Not even more exciting, dare I say, more exciting maybe, than men. And of course, you know, that's always going to be the job of a team and a coach to sell it to the fans. When was the moment that you knew this team was special?
Yeah, I think just in the summer, I think we went through a lot of ups and downs as a team, but we stuck through it. And I feel like seeing the team handle adversity in the way that we did this summer, it was different than last summer. And I knew from then that this team was going to be different, just our mindset. And I think we all just believe in each other. We all believe in the coaching staff. So I think I would definitely say this summer, especially when I got back from USA Basketball, it was different, I would say.
Yeah. What do you think kind of inspired that? Was it the coaching staff? Was it you as a leader?
Yeah. I would say a lot of people this year are playing that didn't really play last year. And everybody had the mindset like we're almost there last year. And I think this year it flipped to we're going to be there, not we're almost there, we're going to be there. And a lot of people just continue to believe in themselves and this program. And I feel like a lot of my teammates have been overlooked and had to prove people wrong. I would say me as well. So I think just having that common mindset is why we are where we are today.
And there's no better way to prove people wrong or to prove yourself as a national contender than doing it in the SEC. It's a gauntlet. How would you describe your SEC schedule this past season? How would you describe the level of competition in this conference?
I would say it's the best competition in the country. I think what we do in the SEC, I think other conferences are almost there, but they're not fully there. And every night is a battle. Like on any given night, any team can beat you. And it's hard to not make as many mistakes because teams capitalize on them here in this conference. But I think it just prepares us for the tournament, especially the physicality. And then a lot of pros come out of the SEC as well. So it's just a great showing.
Yeah. Do you feel better prepared for the grind of the NCAA tournament because you've gone through the SEC?
I would say we definitely learned a lot about ourselves during the SEC and as a team and like where we want to go, and we're on that way. So I think it definitely prepared us a little bit for it. And we're going to play different teams from different conferences as well. But I feel like as long as we play with our physicality and competitiveness, we should be good.
So we're talking just the day before the SEC tournament starts. Of course, you all have earned the double bye in Greenville. So now that we're just a couple of days out from your first action in the SEC tournament, where's your mindset and where's the mindset of your team?
Yeah, I think we're not trying to get too far ahead of ourselves. I think a lot of teams overlook and they're just like, we want to get to the championship. We want to win that. But you have to win the first game first, the next game after that. So I think our mindset as a team is just focusing on the next game in front of us, not getting too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, one game at a time. I hear you. And I know you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. I know that it is just, you know, every opponent is nameless and faceless. But yeah. Is a national championship the ultimate goal this year?
Of course, yes.
Do you think, what gives you confidence that your team can achieve that goal?
I think the way we deal with adversity, I think it's not going to be easy, of course, and it's win or go home. But I think our ability to stay connected, it definitely gives us hope.
So I think everyone across the country knows Mikayla Blake's The Hooper and just the obscene stat lines that you can put up on any given night. But what do you want people to know about Mikayla Blake's the person?
Yeah, I think I'm probably on the court probably one of the most serious people, but off the court, I'm very unserious. And I love to be around friends and family. Like, that just gives me joy and fills my cup. So I'd say that's the main thing. I'm just a family person.
And you did mention, you know, how the SEC can get people to the next level, that you see pros up and down the W that came from SEC programs. Do you see yourself playing at the next level whenever that day comes?
Hopefully, yeah, God willing. And if that's my path, that's the plan.
Michaela Blakes, she's an absolute superstar. You can catch her in some SEC action in the SEC tournament in Greenville and the NCAA tournament as well. Michaela, before we let you go, I'll give you the floor to campaign why Vanderbilt should be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
I mean, I feel like we've proved ourselves. And even if we don't get that seed, it's not going to affect us anyway. We still know who we are as a team. And we know the opponents that are coming. And even having a two seed, people are still going to be coming for us. So I think we're just going to have motivation either way.
The hunted.
Yes.
Always got a target on their backs. Michaela Blakes, Vanderbilt Women's Basketball. Michaela, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Good luck in the
postseason. Moving along in our conference tournament previews, let's go to the ACC, where if we're just going to – we're talking about vibes, like Duke does not have great vibes at the moment, but there's still the number one overall seed in the ACC. Louisville, North Carolina, and NC State round out the top four. Those four teams will get the double bye in the ACC tournament. Let's stick on that team that I just mentioned, because they seem to always come up in our conversations, don't they, Cass? I got trust issues with this Duke women's basketball program. Just when I think I'm ready to give up on them, then they pull me back in, and then I can trust them again. And then they let me down yet again. They're like an abusive ex-boyfriend. Cass. Jeez.
Yeah.
Emotionally abusive. Manipulative, perhaps. maybe that was a bold word to use. Anyway. What does Duke need to do in the ACC tournament to change your mind or to give you some confidence that this Duke team is maybe playing to the ceiling that we know they can?
Get the ball to Toby Fournier. Like, just feed her. Get it to her.
Yeah.
Stay out of foul trouble. Like, how wild. First of all, the ACC is going to be chaotic. We're going to dive deeper into this. I feel like every single year the ACC is just chaotic. I asked Felicia Leggett-Jack at Syracuse a couple years ago about this, and she felt like at the time that this was just the conference of guards, and that can kind of shift things quickly, and that's why things can, as you used earlier, like cannibalize. Last day of the regular season, both Duke and Louisville lose again. Not to mention, like, Louisville could have taken a share of the regular season title and did not because of Hannah Hidalgo, Notre Dame. But back to your main point, like, Duke defensively is great, can be great, can tighten the leash. I think offensively, they still go through stretches where they're just not able to get the ball to the right people and they stumble. Mm-hmm. They're the reigning champions in the tournament. They can be back-to-back champions. But I kind of think I would take the field and see if we have a fifth champion in as many years.
I think that's what makes the conference so fun, is the fact that it does feel really unpredictable. If Duke wins the thing, that will be just as shocking to me as if Louisville wins it, or if North Carolina wins it, or if Notre Dame wins it. And we're talking about the number one overall seed at the tournament. So that does add this layer of weird things. Anything can happen in March. Weird things can happen, but especially in the ACC. They remind me of that meme of, like, the mom driving a car and her son's in the car seat in the back. And she's like, why can't you just be normal? And he's like coming out of his car seat, like screaming. He's like, ah! That's how I feel the ACC is. They just won't be. I'll send you that. I'll send it to you. Have you ever seen it?
Okay.
It's funny.
No, I'm not online. You know this. I say online.
I shouldn't be. However... Here I am referencing memes you've never even heard of. But that's kind of how it feels, that if it wasn't a Duke, who do you feel most confident in this conference?
I do like Louisville. You know, even given their loss to Notre Dame, I like Louisville. They have a team that feels very by committee in a good way. They're always often able to find a bucket from someone. And I think that is huge. I'm going to throw something wild out here, though.
Ooh.
Do not overlook Notre Dame. Watching that Notre Dame-Louisville game, like, Hannah Hidalgo is still it. She was kind of taken out for a few very short spells to give her a little bit of a break because she does so much. But it was impressive how much she could do and how much she could lift Notre Dame. I mean, her steal with 14 seconds left, which was just a terrible decision by Louisville, to be honest, basically seals that game. She makes key buckets at key times. Like, the passes, like, I think when you get to March, it's not only about if you have the best player, but it can be. And Hannah Hidalgo is probably the best player in the ACC. So I would not overlook them.
I mean, if you look at what Hannah Hidalgo did against the 10th ranked team in the country, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, and 5 steals. I mean, like, Hannah Hidalgo has now had at least 25 points or more in each of her last 4 games. Like, Hannah Hidalgo on any given night. And it does feel like sometimes Hannah Hidalgo performs on the biggest stages. That at times in their biggest matchups against the highest ranked teams, like, Hannah Hidalgo rises to the occasion. So I think she is one that you can't count out, not just in the ACC tournament, but in the NCAA tournament as well. Now, that's not a team that I would want to see in my bracket if I'm a one seed. Like, there are going to be teams out there that ones across the country are looking at it like, seriously, like, I'm a top 4 team in the country and I'm getting rewarded with getting that team. And I think Notre Dame is one of those teams. All right, moving along in our conference tournament previews, let's look at the Big Ten. There is one question as far as the Big Ten is concerned, and it is it UCLA and everybody else? As much as it feels like it's UCLA and everybody else, I want to give Iowa their due. I want to give them their flowers. They deserve their flowers. But, I mean, UCLA is just on a different stratosphere, Cass.
Yes, they are. The first undefeated Big Ten season since Maryland in 2015. It's the 4th one overall. You know, one of the few teams to go undefeated in their conference. The other is UConn, and then Rice and Farley Dickinson are working on theirs. They have another week left. They've rolled through their opponents. Obviously, again, if I were a betting woman, like, I'm going with UCLA. They have separated themselves. They've played an incredible season. I think watching that first half against USC, it's always very clear Lauren Betts' ability to pass out of the double and triple teams and her teammates' ability to be in their spots and hit those shots has really lifted UCLA this year. But I think they're beatable. I think they can be beatable. I'm looking at Michigan, played them pretty close. Ohio State was the second. And then I know that that Iowa game did not go well, but Iowa had to go to LA. They're going to be a lot closer to home in Indianapolis. And that game, that stretch came right after they lost Taylor McCabe to an ACL. That's a player who was on both of their final 4 teams, was experienced, a strong 3-point shooter. They had to adjust without her. I think they're a little more comfortable now than they were then. And maybe that game looks differently with Ava Hyden, who played a very strong Big Ten tournament last year, and Hannah Stolke in the post, able to kind of take care of Lauren Betts.
I mean, since losing to UCLA, and then they dropped a game against Minnesota as well, but as you pointed out, they were going through some injuries. They were dealing with some changes late in the season, which is going to be difficult for really any team in the country. They've gone on a 6-game winning streak, including a massive 20-point win over the then number 6 team in the country in Michigan and beating Washington, that was a top 25 team at the time. So I was figuring things out, and what a wonderful testament to their coaching job. To be able to, you know, you move on from an absolute legend of the game coach. It's not easy to pick up the next season or the next seasons and find yourself back into the conversation. That's hard enough. Iowa's done it. The second thing is when you're losing someone, when you lose someone for the season, a player that is reliable, a player that has had played a ton of minutes, that's seen a lot of basketball, an older, experienced veteran that you lean on in moments like these, big time games, ranked matchups, tournament games, conference and NCAA both. for Iowa to be able to kind of weather those storms and find themselves squarely in the conversation of being someone that can make a lot of noise in the postseason, that is so much credit to this Iowa team and all of the, you know, the leadership at Iowa.
Yeah, and those three losses, those three in a row, were the only ones they took in the conference slate this season. Also, like, we don't want to take away from what UCLA has done. They are the clear favorites in the Big Ten. But looking down, Minnesota is also a team you shouldn't take your eye off of. This is a program that has been ranked pretty high in net for most of the past 2 months. Did not crack the AP top 25 until the last couple of weeks. And I know talking to some reporters at our mock selection committee, it was brought up, like, what do we think of Minnesota? Like, why aren't they ranked? Why don't we have them high? And they reached the committee's top 16 this past week. But for us at the mock selection committee, it was about they just didn't have a signature win yet. They just didn't have that big win. They defeated Iowa, and I believe it was Ohio State. So keep an eye on them. Another kind of team by committee. All five of their starters contribute pretty evenly, and you can go to any of them throughout the game.
Minnesota's eighth in the net.
Yeah,
I just pulled up the net rankings and I'm scrolling. I'm at like 30, 35. I'm thinking, man, where in the world is Minnesota? Had to scroll all the way up, did completely missed them, that they're sitting in the top 10 in the net. So great call by you, Cass. We are saving the best for last, though, as we look at the Big 12 tournament, which has been so beautifully dysfunctional all season long. And I use that word with all of the love in my heart because, my goodness, I have been enjoying the true and utter chaos that has been the Big 12 so far this season. TCU, the number one team in all the land in Big 12 land. West Virginia, Baylor, and Oklahoma State round out the top four. I guess, who needs a resume boost the most, do you think, in this conference?
I mean, Iowa State, maybe. Feel like that'd be helpful. You know, you have another season of the Cyclones doing really well to start the season, and then it kind of all falls apart, and now you're questioning what kind of team this is. Mm-hmm. And, like, listen, they have that serious injury to Addie Brown. She is incredibly important to this team, and it's not all about Audie Crooks. And Addie was pretty emotional when she came back about what it was like to sit out, and Audie kind of stepped up for her and spoke glowingly of her and what she means to the team. And, like, that is very real for the Cyclones. I think a run through the tournament would certainly help them. Your vibe check, vibes would be huge.
Vibes would be huge. I adore Audie Crooks. Not just what she does on the court. I mean, she's the second leading scorer in college basketball. She just dropped a 40 piece. Like, we know what she can do on the court, her presence on the court. But I talked to Holly Rowe on Yahoo Sports Daily. You can find that on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. And she talked about everything that Audie Crooks has been doing for her community, making sure that there is not food insecurity in her communities in Iowa, food drives and canned food drives, that accepting donations and donating her own money and time and resources to helping her community. It's just a very special, warm, fuzzy kind of story that someone is as good of a person off the court as they are a player on the court. So I'm rooting for Audie Crooks 100%, but Iowa State needs to do more around her. You can't get a 40-point performance from her and then just have the rest of the team not match that same kind of level of production or intensity. I want to see this team go far because I want to see a superstar in Audie Crooks, because that's exactly what she is and who she is. She is a superstar. I feel like she deserves to be on a larger stage in the month of March, but she can't do it by herself. Anything else about the Big 12 that you're kind of looking at? Of course, we know Olivia Miles and TCU. They have been on an absolute heater. West Virginia as well. Anything else that you're keeping an eye on in the Big 12?
Just those. I mean, just how that plays out. I think, to your point, like, going to be another interesting tournament to kind of pay attention to. TCU just beat Baylor again, second time in a couple of weeks. So it seems like it's TCU's very much to lose.
Yeah. So look, that's the Power Four conference tournament previews. They're all going to be an absolute blast. And of course, we'll have our reactions to all of the conference tournaments and the biggest action in those games on next week's edition of Hoops 360, plus an account of Cass's time in Greenville, South Carolina. But those are not the only conference tournaments that we're going to be watching. Those are not the only conference tournaments that matter. We know that 100%. I do want to start with the Big East. And look, we can nitpick the Big East all we want. We can nitpick UConn's conference schedule. We can nitpick the fact that while the Big East has three teams in the top 63 in net rankings, while the SEC has four in the top seven, it's not just a foregone conclusion, Cass. Like we said with UCLA in the Big Ten, like we said with South Carolina in the SEC, you will not see me betting against UConn in conference. Mm-hmm. Out of conference, whatever it might be, if the question is UConn, my answer is yes. But if there's a team in the Big East tournament that's looking to like be rubbing their hands together, looking for an opportunity to pull the upset of the season, which team do you think could leave UConn vulnerable?
It is Villanova. It is Villanova because Villanova led UConn for 16 minutes and 10-ish or so seconds in the first half of their game a couple weeks ago. That speaks to how dominant UConn has been, that we're talking about a team leading for 16 minutes. Imagine talking about that in the SEC.
Breaking news.
But yeah, I mean, it's Villanova for a couple of reasons. That would be the third time they met. UConn won by like 50 the first time, 14 the second time. It was kind of their second consecutive slow start for UConn. But Villanova is solidly in the NCAA tournament field, I would say. They rank 34th in net. They should be a shoe-in. It's about where they land, though. I, too, also want to add for UConn, like, this is the point in time where you really start to drill in any team on these little mistakes can balloon into big mistakes, and you cannot let off the gas. So Chino Auriemma at halftime of their season finale against St. John's, I don't know what question he was asked because I was kind of typing, but he makes a quip about how they have as many offensive rebounds as a dead person.
Which is zero. Okay. Yeah, I get the point, Chino. I definitely do. That's great. I think maybe we're just being just a little bit dramatic. But I mean,
yeah, you got to be dramatic to win 12 national championships.
You got to keep your team focused somehow. And clearly he's doing something right. So if comparing your team to the deceased is what it needs to be, then you know what? Who am I to critique a man's process? But
exactly.
Point heard and point understood. The Ivy League has a special place in my heart. They came onto the scene last year. That I felt like when we were doing our Selection Sunday shows, which we will do this year as well. Stay tuned for information on that. We were all rooting so hard for the Ivy League. We wanted multiple teams from the Ivy League represented in the NCAA tournament. And this year, the Ivy League has been a wonderful theater. We have Princeton and Columbia sitting atop the Ivy League. Princeton sitting at 38, Columbia at 56 in the net. So maybe Columbia's feeling a little vulnerable about if they will find themselves in the tournament or not. But what are you going to be looking for in the Ivy League conference tournament
I'm going to be looking for exactly that. The Ivy League Ivy Madness is taking place in Ithaca, New York, which is near where I grew up. So I cannot attend that because we will be in New York City. But I am looking at if Princeton wins the tournament, I don't think it's as clear of a case for Columbia to get an at-large bid. Now, if Columbia wins the tournament and wins the automatic bid, does Princeton then get in? This is a team, as you said, 39th in net, so it's up there. They've had significant wins. They have a wins above bubble that ranks fifth. It's 3.15. They very much have the resume. I think that's where you get a two-bid Ivy. But that is what I want to see.
And that is one that's going to matter big time in the NCAA tournament. Let's say if you know the Ivy is a two-bid league. Talking about bid thieves here. I know every team that's on the bubble that didn't win their conference tournament, or at least didn't make a run in their conference tournament, they're looking for those kind of outcomes because that could be the thing that leaves someone on the bubble sitting at home instead of going to the NCAA tournament. But that's not the only conference cast that you have your eye on.
No, I am looking at the Summit League where South Dakota State and North Dakota State are competing. Again, like I don't think we're at a point where we're going to see two of them in, but whichever one wins there is going to be huge. Every single year when we get to Selection Sunday, South Dakota State is a mid-major you don't want to run into. And then if you're looking down at the Atlantic 10, you have Rhode Island, George Mason, Richmond, and Maggie Dugan are the three seed there.
That's our problem.
Yeah, so how that plays out, that's going to be a tournament you're also going to want to watch and see which teams get into the field.
Keep an eye on those some of those multi-bid leagues that maybe we only view as a league that only the conference tournament champion could get into could cause a whole lot of chaos on Selection Sunday. So like I mentioned, we'll have your Selection Sunday breakdowns, we'll have your conference tournament breakdowns. But before we get into all of that and all of the lovely action that we have coming up in the month of March, Cass, when we look at the big landscape of women's college basketball, now that we're just a couple of days away when we're recording this podcast from conference tournament action starting, what tournament do you think will be the most intriguing?
I mean, I'm going to say SEC because I'm going to SEC. That's where we're sending me.
Yeah. SEC bias over here.
SEC bias. But, you know, like the ACC is going to be fun. I think the Big Ten, if you take UCLA out of it, if you feel that they're so far away from the competition, like what are we going to see out of the Big Ten? I think the exciting thing about conference tournaments is you are getting teams that know each other so well. They're on short rest. And this is the time when, as we said earlier, it's 0-0. It's a new season. The pressure is on. You are battling for You are battling to see another day, and that adds another set of pressures that you're going to see come out. And I think we could see a lot of upsets, not only in the conference tournament, but in March Madness when it comes to that, you know, kind of 10 to 50 line.
I was just thinking of this because I feel like this is a conversation that comes up every year around tournament time, whether it's women's hoops, men's hoops, softball, baseball, whatever. What's your personal philosophy with tournaments? Because I feel like we have some coaches that will approach it with the idea of like, look, anytime we can play for a championship, anytime that we can play for a banner in a ring, we're going to do every single little teeny tiny thing in our power to make sure that we win those games. But then I do understand the alternative of more games in a conference tournament is just more games, more opportunities for injury, knock on wood. Of course, we would never wish that on anybody. More opportunities to get banged up, to get tired, to so on and so forth. The list goes on and on and on. What's your personal philosophy? I don't think we've ever chatted about this.
No, if not. My strong philosophy is you can't save yourself for something you don't know you're going to get to. Play, you know, we've talked to a lot of coaches, like you prepare your players for this, you know, conditioning wise, all of these things. Like, I think, especially in college athletics and even in the pros, right? Like, you don't know if you're going to get back. Like, time is fleeting. You only have, if you're a college athlete, a maximum of 4 years now. You play for everything. You play to win a championship. You play, you know, for that honor. Like, there is only one national champion per year. So that's what, 15 kids who are going to lift that trophy? Like, there's a reason that when Texas won and reached the Final Four last year, they won that regional. Like, Vic Schaefer was very intentional about making sure every player could walk up the ladder and cut a piece of the net and enjoy it and soak it in, because you don't know how many times you're going to be able to do that at all.
And you're not guaranteed very much. You're not really guaranteed anything in sports. Mm-mm. You're not guaranteed to cut down the net in the NCAA tournament. But if you have something ahead of you right now, take it. Like, take it, use every single opportunity, give it your 110% effort to get what is right in front of you right now. I am always of the belief that you can't play scared. You can't play basketball scared. You can't play football scared. You can't play insert whatever sport here scared. Because if you're the thought at the forefront of your mind is, okay, well, if we play in this game or if we go far in this conference tournament, then one of our players might get hurt and then we'll be, you know, worse for the wear in the NCAA tournament when it really matters. I get that. I understand that. And unfortunately, injuries and getting banged up is a part of the game. But do you want to live in a world of a hypothetical? Or do you want to live in a world where you have something in front of you right now? And an opportunity to win a conference tournament is something that is in front of you right now. So I would much rather have my players play 100% every single night in a conference tournament, even if it's not the most important thing and isn't the greatest goal of your entire season, because there is no guarantee that you're going to be able to win a championship. So I'm with you on that. I understand the alternative viewpoint of we're going to keep the main thing, and that is winning a championship, an NCAA tournament championship rather than a conference championship. I hear that. I see that. I understand that. I just think it's the wrong message to send your locker room if you're saying that, hey, this just isn't important enough to us. I love a conference tournament weekend. It's an absolute blast. Like you said, familiarity can breed contempt. And these teams know each other very well. These coaches know each other very well. And it absolutely makes for great theater in our conference tournaments. Cass is headed to Greenville. That tournament will start on March 4th, and we'll see the SEC championship on Sunday. Big 10, ACC, and Big 12 also are March 4th as well, as they run throughout the entirety of the weekend. So we'll keep an eye on that. But that is not the only women's hoops action this week. We've got the Unrivaled Championship on Wednesday, March 4th at 9:30 Eastern Time. That game will be back in the cozy, comfy confines of Miami. Cass, it's been a blast. Safe travels. Enjoy it. Report back on Kim Mulkey's outfits, please.
I'll send you pictures.
Please live. Do. Please do. Okay. What do we think she's going to be wearing for their first game? They get the double bye, so they don't play until, what is that, Friday?
I feel like, what if she would never do this. What if she wore the same thing and it just like added more feathers every day?
Can you add more feathers to her wardrobe? Yeah. Or are we at max capacity with feathers?
I don't think that woman is ever at max capacity with feathers. So,
with anything. Feathers, yeah. Sequins.
Glitter.
Bedazzlement. Yeah. Intensity. The limit does not exist. But yes, please do report back with all of the great outfits. And we will report back to you all next week. Again, we'll have a full breakdown of all of the action in the conference tournament games as we look ahead to the NCAA tournament. It's here. It is time. It is March, and it is beautiful. So you can check out the rest of our breakdowns on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and wherever you get your podcasts. But if you're watching on YouTube and you disagree with something that we said, you have a question for us, you want us to touch on something, just leave us a comment down below on the YouTube page, and we will be sure to deliver everything that you want to hear. For Cassandra Negley, I am Caroline Fenton. Thanks for tuning in on today's edition of Hoops 360.